My goodness, look at you. My name is Elsa, and I'm a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi. It's not the easiest thing in the world to follow him. This is only the third time in all of our years of being around this program that Chuck has talked first and I have followed. I usually go first and have about maybe 15, 20 minutes. You can't say much in 15 or 20 minutes. So this is a little different. I've been a little emotional tonight because sitting here in front of me are many, many, many of my dearest, dearest people. The people that I love so very, very much. Not only all of my lovely Al-Anons, but all of you lovely AAs that have done so much for me in my years around this program. Without you, I don't know what I would do. And people ask me every once in a while, how come you still go to AA and Al-Anon meetings after all these many years? And I have to say, because I want to. Because here are my people. Here is the program that keeps me a little saner than I used to be. And to me, it is completely necessary because those of us who are non-alcoholics run the same risk that the alcoholic does if we get away from this program. It's too easy to slip back into the old stinking thinking, believe me, because I've had quite a bit of experience along that line, and I know exactly what it will do because it almost destroyed me. I'm not going to talk about my story tonight because there isn't time when there are two speakers. But I do want to tell you, and some of you have heard this time and time again, but you're going to have to listen to it again, some of the things that I've had to learn in this program, because I'm one of the slow ones. It's taken me a long time to find me and to find some peace of mind and joy within myself. I hope there's some other slow ones out there because I'd hate to think that I was the only one. And you know, many of you, perhaps, who have never been to an Al-Anon meeting before, wonder a little bit, why Al-Anon? Why Al-Anon? And I was thinking, sitting down there, of a gal that came to our group many, many years ago here in Laguna. She was married to a still practicing alcoholic, and she asked him one day for the car keys because she wanted to go to a meeting. And he turned on her and he said, I don't know why you want to go to those damn meetings anyway. And she turned to him and she said, I'm going to those meetings to try to find a way so that I won't have to kill you. Believe me. If you're anything like me, that's one of the reasons why I'm here. Because Chuck told you a little of his background, and I think perhaps you can see that there were many times that if I had had a weapon to my hand, I'd have beaten his brains out. I really would have. But the thing that's so strange to me is that those of us who fall in love at a young age, when we're young and naive and full of dreams with stars in our eyes, and fall in love with a great guy that has everything in the world that you want. He's a perfectionist. He's an idealist. He's a sensitive sort of a creature. He's tall and he's handsome. And he's got everything that we want in a husband. And perhaps you have some happy years in the beginning, as we did. But then you have to watch this beloved person, year by year, fall apart and before your very eyes and become something that is so different from the one you fell in love with that you hardly recognize him for the same person. I think you can realize that from what Chuck told you. So there isn't a person here who doesn't know what it's like to live with active alcoholism. So I don't need to spend any time on that. But when the time finally came with me, when I knew I was going to have to make a decision, I'd been on the fence for many, many years, I finally made a decision that I should have made probably long before, but I was unable to, because I'm one of those people who was a devout coward, if you know what I mean, scared to death to get out on my own. But you know, it just became very clear to me just recently. We talk a great deal in Al-Anon about release with love. When I made my decision to go to a lawyer and start divorce proceedings, it was not done with love, it was done with bitterness and hatred. But today I can see that actually I let go. I didn't let go and let God, not in my own mind, but I let go. And for some strange reason, very shortly after that moment, even before the divorce had a chance to really get going, Chuck came to AA. Now here is where my story really starts. Because I fell in love with AA, and I fell in love with its people, and I was in every AA meeting with Chuck for 6 long years before Al-Anon was born. And I thought I was doing fine. You see, I was like the one that Chuck spoke of. I thought if you just straighten up and fly right, everything was going to be just wonderful, you know? And it was, so far as I knew. We had a sober household for 6 years. Everything was going along very nicely. And then Lois came to the coast and suggested that we start a program for the families of alcoholics because it was so desperately needed. And 3 of us were sitting at a table at the old 6300 Club. I know Beulah remembered that, and there are probably others here that have been around that long. And we said to each other, let's start a meeting in Beverly Hills. They need it so desperately out there. Now, the thing that I want to talk about a little bit is motives. Motives. Because that meeting was started in my home in Beverly Hills. And my motive in starting that meeting was to help you poor, benighted people that didn't know all the answers that I knew. You see, I've been listening for 6 long years to you AA people, with people in our home and in meetings, and I had a head full of knowledge. I'd read the book time and time again, and the chapter to wives and the family afterwards, and I knew all the answers up here in my head. And that meeting went for quite a while, and I guess I helped some people. I'm sure I did. Because you can't be around the AA program for as long as I was without changing a great many of your thinking apparatus. Quite a few of my ideas have changed. But somehow or other, something has to happen to those of us that are as slow as I am and those who are so feel that everything is okay. I didn't know who I was. I had never known who I was. I was just living along with the rest of the people. And my husband was one who came into this program desperately seeking an answer. And he grew so fast that he left me trailing way behind. And that's where you Al-Anons today are so very, very lucky. And I wonder sometimes if you realize how lucky you are to have a way to go so that you don't have to trail along behind and stay the nothingness and the nothing feeling that you've had all during the alcoholic years. Suddenly we decided to sell our home in Beverly Hills and move down here to Laguna. And we moved into a completely strange area with no friends. I knew a few AAs and one Al-Anon. There was no Al-Anon in Laguna at that time. There was one meeting in Corona del Mar and one in Santa Ana, if I remember correctly. And that was it in this area. My husband's business was still in Los Angeles. And as most of you know, he talks a great deal. That's putting it mildly, if you want to know the truth. So instead of coming home for dinner, as he had been used to doing in Beverly Hills, and taking me with him to the meetings, he was going from his office to wherever he was talking, or wherever he was going on a 12-step call. And here sat poor little me down here in Laguna, many, many, many miles from where he was, all alone. Poor me. And this is the thing that I want to make clear if I can. You see, by the time Al-Anon began, I was so self-satisfied that it never occurred to me that I needed help. Because, you see, I'd been such a good woman all my life. I was okay. He was okay. So everything else must be okay. But having only the knowledge up in my head and not really having it inside of me and not acting as though it were true all of the time, I was putting up a pretty good front, a very nice facade, if you will, that I had learned to do in my young years when I had done quite a bit of dramatic work. That front that nobody but nobody can get through. Because I wasn't about to let you know how I really felt inside. I wasn't about to let you know that I felt like a nothing, as though I had no personal integrity left. I wasn't a person. I was Chuck's shadow. And I looked like one and I felt like one. And there's a gal sitting over there that knows exactly what I'm talking about because she's lived next door to me for some time. And she's watched me change. And she gets a kick out of it every once in a while. Even the clothes have changed, if you want to know the truth. When I came down here, I was the beige lady, you know. Very quiet, never opened my mouth, afraid to say anything for fear you would think I was stupid, because I'd been told I was stupid for so long I'd gotten the place where I believed it. That's one of the things an alcoholic does to us that they don't even realize. When Chuck said that nobody tears you down except to build themselves up, this is true, but we don't understand it. We don't understand this. And so we take everything, pardon me, everything seriously. And we think they mean it when they make us feel as though we didn't have a brain in our heads. But at any rate, that's getting ahead of my story. And this is the important period of my life. The very important period of my life. And time is running out on us. I don't know how it could run out so fast, but it is. Anyway. Got till 9:30. Yeah. Okay. I guess I can say what I've got to say in a half hour, I hope. Anyway, not having this program inside of me I became very, very miserable, extremely miserable. And I began to put pressure on Chuck to slow down, because by this time, you see, I'd gotten back to the old thinking. I'm not getting my just due. I'm not getting my proper respect. After all, he's been talking all these years. Isn't it time he slowed down and gave me a little more attention? All of the ugly stuff that we used to have came back. And he tried. He tried very hard to slow down. And after about 3 months of it, he just gave me an ultimatum. He said, "I'm sorry. I can't do it this way. How am I going to pick and choose who I will talk for? Can I say yes to one and no to another?" He said, "I can't do it this way." He said, "When AA asks me to do something, I have got to go. And you will have to adjust yourself to it." Well, I wasn't very adjustable in those days. And I didn't like this. But I knew that when he said something like that, he meant exactly what he said, and there wasn't anything I could do about it. So I wondered what in the world I'd do about me. And many of you have heard this story before, but you see, I have to tell this because this is the thing that made me turn around and start doing this thing right. I suddenly remembered something that had happened in the very, very early years of Chuck's sobriety. When he was asked to talk on Christmas. Now, there isn't a wife here, I am sure, that doesn't know exactly how I reacted to that. And I said, "How dare you make a date on Christmas? This is a family day. The children will be here. You haven't a right to make a date on Christmas." But if you know him, when he makes a date, he keeps it. So I planned an early dinner, and the children were there. But the thing that makes me laugh today and that I find very amusing is that about an hour and a half after we finished dinner, our kids all took off. And we were left alone anyway. They had places they wanted to go and things they wanted to do, so they left. And I got dressed and went down to the meeting with Chuck, which was down in Santa Monica. And at that meeting, there were two very, very drunk winos that had just been pulled out from under the Santa Monica Pier. The following Christmas, he was asked to talk again. And I went a little more willingly this time, not too much. But the thing that I had to remember was that at that meeting, the man who led the meeting was one of those winos, and the other one read the steps. And they had been sober that entire year. And they told us afterwards that they had not remembered one word that Chuck had said that night. They were too drunk. The thing they did remember, and that impressed them, was that a husband and wife would leave their family on Christmas and come to share at an AA meeting. And for the first time in my life, I could see exactly what we are in. We are in a life and death business, you and I. Both in AA and Al-Anon, we are in the business of saving lives. And whatever my husband has to do in order to fulfill his commitment to this beautiful program, I have to leave him free to do. But what about me? What am I going to do about me? And my youngest son gave me the answer. He said, "Mom, why don't you start another Al-Anon group?" He was smarter than I was. And that's exactly what I did. And this beloved group has done more for me than anything that's ever happened to me in the rest of my life. Because they have helped me find me. To find my own personal integrity again. To be able to hold my head up and feel like a person, to feel like an individual again. Something that I had completely lost if I had ever had it. When you live with alcoholism over many, many years, it does something to most of us that's not very nice. Especially in the old days where my experience was, when nobody knew what alcoholism was. And there were no answers for the alcoholic. And no way for the non-alcoholic to understand the disease of alcoholism. God, you're fortunate today. You not only have a place to go to learn more about the disease of alcoholism, but to learn more about yourself, because that's what Al-Anon is all about. We go to Al-Anon to find our own peace, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the alcoholic per se. And if any of you think we go to Al-Anon to talk about you, I would disabuse your mind immediately, because that's not what we go there for. And if your pride says, how could you? Maybe after a gal or a guy has been in Al-Anon for a while, I'm sure that in the beginning, the alcoholic resents it very much. But after a while, I think that you will find that the change that you find in us is going to be something that's going to make life a lot easier for you. It will make life a lot easier for your children. Because we find out at long last, as Chuck so ably said a little bit ago, that our own peace of mind and our own serenity cannot depend upon the actions of other people, places, things, circumstances, that it is definitely an inside job. And when we can live comfortably and joyously with ourselves, we find that we get along pretty well in the world out here. Pretty well. Because we learn to quit expecting perfection out of the alcoholic, even after they get sober. And that's the reason for one of our don'ts, is don't expect immediate contented sobriety. But at any rate, the things that I had to begin to do was to look within me. And I think the thing that I've been trying to do for the last 16 years is to make the inside match the outside. Because I spent so many, many years with that front that I told you about. And the inside definitely did not match the outside. And a gal came to our meeting one day and spoke for us. And after the meeting she said, you know, I used to watch Elsa and wonder if she was as serene on the inside as she looked on the outside. And I had to go up and tell her afterwards that I definitely at that time was not as serene on the inside as I looked on the outside. So I began to have to take these 12 beautiful steps for me, by me, something I had never really done before. I didn't think I needed to. I thought I knew so much. And the motive in starting this group was entirely different from the motive with which I started the Beverly Hills group. This group I started because I needed you so desperately. You didn't need me, I needed you. And this is where the difference lies. Because then I was open, you see, to learn. Whereas before I had been closed-minded and couldn't learn, really. I could spout the words, but they didn't really mean anything inside. And I was not acting as the words, like the words that I said. I began to see that I had had a great and difficult problem all of my life. And that was my terrible, terrible need for approval and my fear of disapproval. This is the thing that had made me a yes person all my life. I'd agree with you no matter what side of the fence you were on, because I thought if I disagreed with you, you'd think I was stupid. And I had to have you like me. I just had to. And I began to see that I was making a lot of things important that weren't important at all. Not the least bit important. I was expecting attitudes and actions and reactions from other people that they were unable to give. And I was always disappointed. Always disappointed. And when I began to let go and allow people to be what they had to be and accept them exactly as they are, where they are, and like them for the good things, the likable things about them, and skip the rest, I began to feel more comfortable. But I think the thing that I had the most trouble with was in learning to really love. Because I came into this program completely frozen inside, I couldn't feel. And that stayed with me for many, many years. I couldn't even feel anticipation. But strangely enough, this beautiful group kept on loving me in spite of me. And pretty soon, that frozen inside of me began to melt down. And whereas I used to be so embarrassed if you'd come up to me and say, I love you, because I couldn't say I love you back, because I felt like a hypocrite. And finally, it was possible for me to say, I love you back and mean it and feel good about it. And it makes all the difference in the world. And when Chuck says he's taught me everything I know, that's almost true. It's almost true, but not quite. Not quite. Because I've learned a great deal from AA, and I've learned a great deal from this program, the Al-Anon program. And there were many things that I used to talk about and didn't really know what they meant. And one of them was changing your motives from doing what you do because you have to doing what you do just for free and for fun because you want to. And strangely enough, I was able to apply it to my simple things as my housework, something that I despised, I couldn't stand. You know, I'm the kind of a person, when I tell you that I needed approval so desperately, I've ironed my husband's shirts for 40 years. And for 40 years, I have hung them on the door jams so that when my husband came home, he would see how hard I'd worked. Thank God for wash and wear shirts. I don't have to iron them anymore. You know, a thing came out in the grapevine a good many years ago about this need for approval that we all seem to have. It said we wouldn't be so concerned about what people think about us if we knew how seldom they do. And believe me, that's true. You see, I had just as much ego as the person who thinks they're a hotshot. That my ego was turned around backwards. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. Sackcloth and ashes, you know? But it's just the same as the other kind of ego. It's all the same because it's all self-thinking. All self-thinking. And it almost destroyed me. I can't say that I am perfect at this thing because I am not. Life is not like that. Life is not always a bowl of cherries. And Chuck and I have had some rather difficult times to go through since sobriety, as many of you have had. But if it hadn't been for this program, my God, we'd have broken our hearts over a few things. But thank God for Al-Anon and AA, because somehow or other we were able to cope, even though we had to stand still and hurt quite a bit. Quite a bit. But then to be able to turn around and come to your meeting where people love you and share with you and you have friends, everything somehow or other gets to be all right. And you get to finally to the place where you can say it's no big thing. This too will pass. This too will pass. Another thing that I was talking about years ago was to change your motive for loving. I used to love because I thought I had to. And when I was able to see that if you turn it around and just love for free and for fun, just because you want to, with no expectancy, then life becomes pretty easy and pretty simple. But I didn't really know what it meant. And then a friend of ours many years ago had said that if God had made two of us exactly alike, one of us would be unnecessary. Think about that one for a little while. It'll kill you. I began to talk about the uniqueness of the individual. The uniqueness of the individual. Because I hear so many, many people in Al-Anon wanting to be as good as or better than or like somebody else, you know, afraid to get up and talk because they can't be as good a speaker as Maureen down there or somebody. And I didn't really know what I was talking about until one night, Chuck and I were sitting in our living room, up there on the hill, looking out at the view, just quietly, not talking. And I had found myself for a long time very envious of him, very envious of his lovely sense of humor and his marvelous spiritual understanding. And I said something to him about it. And he sat there very quietly for a minute, and then he turned to me and he said, "Do you suppose there could be a little competition?" Now, this is the first time that that word had ever been spoken between us, and yet I had been watching competitiveness in families over a long period of time and wondering what we could do to alleviate that situation, how we could show people that they were competing when they didn't need to compete. And it came home so clear to me that night. I looked at him and I looked at myself and I said, "Why? Why do you want to be like him? Because you can't be like him. We are total opposites, Chuck and I. We're very, very different. We're not alike at all. And yet we fortunately think very much along the same lines. We're trying to live in the same identical program. We're going down this pathway separately but together, just like two railroad tracks. Why do I want to be like him when I can't? We think very much the same. In many areas. Fortunately, we like pretty much the same kind of people. We enjoy very much the same kinds of things, and yet we're totally different. In fact, he's a Leo and I'm a Taurus, and that's bad news. That's bad news. According to the astrologers, we never should have been able to get along, and we get along beautifully. But I could see so clearly that night that I did not need to envy Chuck any longer, that Chuck is Chuck and I am me. He's got to do it his way. I've got to say it my way, even though we say a lot of the same things, but we say them in different words. And it gave me a sense of freedom that I have never felt in my life before. You see, as a unique God's child, which each one of you are, each one of you is a unique God's child. There's no one else on the face of the earth quite like you. And if you, as a unique God's child, don't make your own unique contribution to life, it won't be made. It'll be lost. So there's no need for feeling like a nothing. There's no need to feel like sackcloth and ashes. There's no need to beat your breast and say, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy. Because as a unique person, you are worthy. And when you know that, you don't have to compete with anyone else. And it's the greatest freedom in the world. And it's beautiful. Many years ago, when I was on the intergroup committee, we were looking at an expression that is used in all of our Al-Anon literature, emotional detachment. They talk a great deal about emotional detachment in our literature. And we felt that that was kind of cold because, you know, we're a pretty warm, loving bunch down here in Southern California. And we were trying to find something that would have a little more oomph and a little more warmth to it. And we came up with this release with love. And people ask me everywhere I go, what do you mean by release with love? One man said one night, it sounds kind of like friendly divorce. That isn't what we mean. The only way that I can explain it is to say it this way. To give every person in the world the dignity of God's child. I like that word dignity. Because each one of us has dignity if we will but look for it. Even the drunk passed out on the floor has dignity if you will remember that inside he has not changed. It's the outside that has changed. Because inside he is still God's child, who doesn't want to be the way he is. And when he begins to peel off those ugly layers, the man you fell in love with or the woman you fell in love with is still there. Is still there, but it's all covered up. So to give everyone that dignity, to find their own answers in their own time, in their own way, without interference from us. To give them the dignity to be wrong and the right to make mistakes. Because I think you and I claim that right for ourselves, do we not? The right to make mistakes. Oh, God, what freedom it gives you when you can give the other fellow the right to make mistakes and you can give yourself the right to make mistakes. Today, thank God, you people have taught me how to laugh at me. I'm no longer serious like I used to be. I'm serious about the program, but not about me. I can laugh at me, and if I pull a big silly one, I have to laugh and say, well, I pulled a big fat boo-boo today, and I'm not going to go back in the bedroom and cry over it anymore. Not anymore. Because at least I can see where I made my mistake and I can do something about it. The thing that happens to us in this program, it seems to me, is that we become more and more aware of what we are doing, saying, and thinking. And when we become aware of what we are doing and saying and thinking, we can do something about it if it isn't so good. But all those years that I was not aware and could not see, there are none so blind as those who cannot see or who will not see. And that's usually the case. It's a beautiful way to go. It's a fantastic way to go. All the answers to living are in this program. Beautiful answers. But it takes a whale of a lot of work, believe me. And a whale of a lot of willingness to do what this program suggests. Because the results are so good. So very, very good. And as I told you before, I'm not always able to handle this situation the way I would like to, because every once in a while I catch myself slipping back into the old critical, judgmental mood that I used to have, and I catch myself watching again, and criticizing again. And they're all little things. They really don't amount to a great deal. But when you've been doing them over a period of months, I imagine that it drives the alcoholic right up the wall. And a couple of years ago, Chuck said to me one night coming home from a friend's home, "What on earth is the matter? I can't do anything right lately." And I had to take a real good look at me. And I found that over several months' time, I had gradually, subtly, little by little, allowed myself to slip right back into the old critical me. And I was criticizing for near everything he did. They were not important things. It was, why don't you put your shoes away? Why don't you close the closet doors? Why do you drive so close to that car in front? All of these kind of things, you know. But when they pile up over a period of months, it gets pretty bad. Especially when you don't even realize what you're doing, you see. And it shook me up. And I had to take a real good look at me. And you know what I had to do in order to make amends? We were talking at a conference in the South, I think it was. And there must have been at least 700, 800 people there. And I had to apologize to my good husband in front of all those people and tell him exactly what I had allowed myself to do. But you know, it did something for me. It helped me tremendously, and I have to watch myself all the time not to be the old critical, judgmental person that I used to be. Because we have a thing in Al-Anon that we talk about once in a while, and that is, it comes from the Indians. And it says we haven't any right to judge another human being until we have walked for many moons in their moccasins. And believe me, that's true. Because how do I know what a person is feeling inside? I don't. I only know how I feel inside. And when I am comfortable with me and with you, life goes on pretty well and pretty comfortably. But when I allow myself to slip back, then I have to remind myself again, okay, old girl, you're a unique individual. And you're doing a lousy job today. Lousy job. So you're not fulfilling what you need to fulfill. And I have to get my sense of humor back and turn around and laugh at me and say to my cohorts in Al-Anon, for God's sake, don't be so serious. We're inclined, we Al-Anons, to be too serious, much too serious. But one of the joys of most of the Al-Anon meetings is that we have a great deal of laughter, as you have in AA. And once in a while, I have to talk for a group that is so cold that it just absolutely floors me. I had to talk to two in a row last year, and they sat there like wooden Indians, and I got absolutely nothing back. I couldn't make them smile. I couldn't make them frown. I couldn't make them change expression. I was just pulling it up from my bootstraps. It was the most difficult talks I ever gave in my life. Very, very difficult. So don't be afraid to laugh, because that is the thing that saves our lives. Even if you're living with a practicing alcoholic, when you learn to allow the alcoholic the privilege of finding his own answers in his own time, in his own way, and you get busy and find your own peace and joy in spite of him or her, whichever the case may be. Strangely enough, I've seen it happen time and time and time again. The alcoholic will feel a freedom that he has never felt before, because nobody is on his back. Nobody's protecting him anymore. Nobody's picking up his marbles. People are loving him and letting him go. And pretty soon you find him in AA. And it happens time and time again. And sometimes in as short a time as a couple of weeks, I've seen it happen. So, do keep coming back. Because this is a fantastic way to go. And it gets better day by day. Day by day. And I would say to you on closing, the thing that I so often say, that if it was necessary for Chuck and me to go through the hell on earth that we went through for a long, long time, in order to find what we have had for almost 29 years, then it was worth it. God bless you, and thank you.